Have you heard of the little church that could? Join Pastor Bob Enyart at Denver Bible Church for Sunday school at 9:30 a.m., worship service from 10:50 until noon, and our Sunday evening Bible study at 6 p.m. Located at Two Roads School at 7180 Oak Street in Arvada, Colorado. Join us on Sundays as we study the meat of the Word of God, to worship our awesome Creator and to equip the saints for the service of the Lord.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We're here on the 50,000 watt AM 670 KLTT. We've been here for 20 years on the air, but what a celebration. November 2011, the world's population has reached 7 billion people. In order to help us celebrate that and talk about the issue of children, and in fact, the worldwide jihad against children by liberals and leftists in America, Europe, and elsewhere, we have the president of the Population Research Institute, Stephen Mosher. Stephen, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Steve, it's a thrill to have you on. I've seen your documentary on Russia and the demographic crisis that they're going through there. There's the Islamification of France. There is, in China, forced abortion. We've done many shows on that topic. We've interviewed a woman who endured a forced abortion there. So I'd like to get from you, first of all, the function of Population Research Institute. What do you guys do?
Well, what we do is make the case for people. We believe that babies are a blessing, shouldn't be viewed as a burden on their families or on their societies or on the world, because they're a blessing to their communities, to their nations. We make the case that people are the ultimate resource. You know, we talk a lot about resources of this and that kind, but the ultimate resource, the one resource you cannot do without, is the human being. We're all gifted with a God-given intelligence that enables us to solve problems and react creatively to problems that we may cause in our numbers. And, of course, we're to be good stewards of the created world that we live in.
Yeah, we all appreciate having a good standard of living. For that, we need to produce things, and the most scarce of all the factors of production is labor and human beings. People are assets. They're not liabilities. But when a government has a non-biblical, godless worldview, then they view people as liabilities. Then they start to adopt policies that are anti-child.
Well, there are only two views of human nature. I mean, the one view, which you and I share, is that we're created by God and we're only a little lower than the angels. And the other view, which is the view of the left, is that we are nothing but a slightly more intelligent version of a great ape. And, of course, if we're nothing but animals, what does it matter if we thin the herd, if we reduce the population size? But human beings are much more than that. But that's the idea of the Chinese government, for example. You know, I was in China. Back in 1979, 1980, I was then in the anthropology department of Stanford University. I was the first American social scientist allowed to do research in China. Wow. And I found myself arriving in China just when the Chinese government decided to impose a one-child policy on its population. And so I saw women who were 6 months pregnant, 9 months pregnant, arrested for the crime of being pregnant, because it had been declared to be a crime to be pregnant illegally. I saw them taken to abortion clinics. I saw them forcibly aborted and subsequently sterilized. In fact, I think I'm the only Western eyewitness to these crimes, which, sad to say, continue even today in China.
Yeah. I was at a Starbucks recently, just weeks ago, and when you log on to the internet at Starbucks, they post different news stories, an artist, musical artist. And here's a story pops up about China's forced abortion program, and it was extremely well produced. And even there at Starbucks, here is the information of the millions and millions of young girls that have been killed in not only sex selection, but in female infanticide. And the reason is because they outlawed brothers and sisters, although they're loosening up on it. There's a one-child policy, and a lot of families need a son. So if they get a daughter, they kill her.
Yeah, I'm personally aware of cases like that. I've been back to China on numerous occasions. In China, we actually have a program of safe houses where women who are pregnant with these illegal overquota children can go to seek sanctuary, and we give them shelter. We help them with the costs of birth and help to relocate them in places where the authorities can't get their hands on them. So, you know, we're only able to help a few, and the Chinese government actually does between 7 and 10 million abortions on women each year. And it brags now that over the last 30 years, it has eliminated 400 million people from the Chinese population. And you have to ask yourself, not only is this a great moral tragedy, but it's an economic one as well, because they've eliminated 400 million of the most enterprising, productive, hardworking people on the planet in the name of population control. And they somehow think they're better off. And of course, they're far worse off than they would otherwise be.
Yeah. Back 15 years ago, we produced an article here. We published it. It's been on our website ever since, kgov.com/population. We looked at the population densities of different countries in the world and cities. And we had a local columnist, Board of Education member on this program. This is back, I think, in 1993 or 1995, maybe. And he argued that the reason Somalia was in such a crisis was because of overpopulation. So I asked him, his name was Jack Fish. I said, Jack, do you know what the population is of Somalia or the density? He had no idea. And the population density then was 29 people per square mile. So we went to the World Almanac and we put a list of nice places to live around the world and then lousy places. And the lousy places had population densities of like under 20 people per square mile, like Angola and Bolivia and Botswana and Central African Republic and Chad and Congo. And as we went around the world, even region by region, for example, China had a higher population density than some of the lowest standard of living countries in Africa, but compared to Taiwan and Japan, China's population density was extremely low, and these other places had double, triple, or more the population density with a far greater standard of living.
Yeah, the people need to understand that their brothers and sisters on the planet are not just consumers. The left wants us to believe that they're just ravenous consumers, kind of a plague on the planet. In fact, they're producers, and most generations leave the world a better place than they found it, a wealthier place, a more prosperous place. In 1800, our per capita income worldwide was $100. Today, at $7 billion, the per capita income worldwide is $9,000. So you've got a 90, wow. You know, you've got a 7-time increase in population, but we are 90 times better off than we were then. And living standards have never been higher. Lifespans have never been longer. Now the average person, maybe 7 billion, born the other day, will probably live to be 69 years old if he or she meets the average. Just a century ago, people were dying in their early 20s. So we've almost tripled the human lifespan. Now, this is something we should be celebrating.
Now, Steve, you're talking about a life expectancy, worldwide life expectancy?
That's right. The global life expectancy, according to the World Health Organization, has never been higher than right now.
Yeah.
And as our numbers have climbed, life expectancy has grown even faster.
Here in the U.S., life expectancy has been increasing at the rate of 1 week per month, about 3 months per year. And so in married people tend to live longer, as that country Western song says, lovers live longer, married people live longer.
Absolutely.
And a lot longer. In America, our life expectancy is somewhere around 80 years old. And not too long ago, you know, men were dying of their first heart attack in their late 40s, early 50s. Like my dad died when he was 53. And men today are living into their 70s. That's common.
Well, it is. And people say, well, in 1960, we had 3 billion. And now, you know, in 50 years later, we've got 7 billion. We've more than doubled the Earth's population. But one of the reasons we've doubled the Earth's population is people are now living decades longer.
Right.
And if they're living longer, naturally, there are going to be more of us around at any given time. For the life of me, I can't understand why we should don sackcloth and ashes over a near doubling of the lifespan. That benefits all of us.
We did a few mathematical calculations back in 1995, maybe it was. And just for fun for chagrins. We figured out if you took all the people of the world and brought them all to a meeting, all together, and you asked them all to stand up like they're going to do calisthenics or something, that not only could they fit in Colorado, but we showed the map of Colorado on a TV program we did nightly in 80 cities around the country for years. And all the people of the world could fit in a little spot on Colorado called Rocky Mountain National Park. And if the population doubled, then they'd spill over into Estes Park, a little vacation town. And we pointed out that if everyone in the world moved to Texas, everyone could move to Texas, have plenty of room to live, and use the rest of the world for agriculture and recreation.
The world is still largely a pretty empty place. And we've got more and more people, even though we've got a larger population, we've got more and more of that population, over half the world's population, now concentrating in cities, which means that large tracts of land which used to be human habitation are now reverting to natural forest in the United States and in other countries. Mm. So, you know, by any measure of well-being, human beings are living longer, more prosperous, healthier lives than ever before. Of course, the other side then says, okay, fine, human beings are doing well, but what about the trees? What about the whale?
Right.
And there's an answer to that as well. And I like the whale example. You know, I was an oceanographer for a few years. I got a degree, advanced degree in oceanography from the University of Washington. And I like whales. I've watched a few swim in the oceans during my 8 years in the Navy. And I like the whales. And the reason why we have declining whale populations is not because of increasing human population, but because the Japanese fishing industry is out violating international covenants and taking whales that they shouldn't be taking. And the Japanese eat all the whales that they harvest from the sea. Mm. And no one is out there arguing we should reduce the number of Japanese babies born in order to save the whale population. And yet, how much less sense does it make to say we should reduce the number of Africans, Asian, and Latin Americans born in order to save the whale population? There's a disconnect there between
Wow.
the problem and the solution.
Wow. Wow, that is just a great illustration. And an oceanographer, boy, Steve, what have you not done? For you to have been the first American scientist in China to witness what you have witnessed, that obviously has influenced the course of your life. Can we go to Russia then, where, let me give this statistic, the number of abortions in Russia per woman. This is startling, and I recommend people go to your website, pop.org, P-O-P.org, and watch this documentary. It's a mini documentary. It's, what, about 12 minutes long.
Yeah.
The number of abortions per woman in Russia is 7. The average woman in Russia has 7 abortions. That is a horrific statistic.
7 abortions and only slightly more than 1 live birth. So of all the babies conceived in Russia, you know, 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 are killed before birth. And it's not, it wouldn't be surprising to people then to understand that Russia's population is shrinking. It's shrinking by 250,000 each year. And by the end of the century, if this continues, there'll be 144 million Russians today. There'll only be about 90 left by the end of the century, and those 90 million will have an average age of about 55. That will be an aging and dying population. That's why we went to Russia, to try to encourage the government to do something to protect life and to preserve the future of Russia, because, you know, they're not providing for the future in the most fundamental way by providing the next generation of Russians. And if you don't do that, you die out over time.
And you pointed out in that documentary that governments for thousands of years have had programs to try to increase the number of children born, but ultimately it comes down to a respect for life, an appreciation of the sanctity of life, the joy of having children, God's gift to us that we could procreate within marriage and raise little ones, boys and girls. My wife Cheryl and I, we couldn't quite keep up with you guys, but we have 7 boys. You and your wife, you have 9 children, right?
We have 9 children, but it's not a competition.
And no, it's not.
My hat's off to you for having 7 boys. We had 5 boys, and the last two were before the birth of our little girl were boys, and my wife came to me and said, we need to pray very hard to have another child. And I said, why, honey? And she said, because I don't want to end on a boy. I want to have a little girl. And so we prayed, and we got our little Kiara.
Congratulations.
The Russians, you know, for a long time now, beginning at the time of the Soviet Union, the Russians have denigrated life. I should say their Soviet authorities denigrated life. They invented the suction abortion machine in the Soviet Union in the 1920s. They told people in the 1920s that marriage was an outmoded institution and they should sleep with whomever they want. If they got pregnant, they could simply go in for an abortion. So this became, abortion became a way of life in the Soviet Union. And the Russian people are still trying to recover from that moral disaster.
Mm. You know, these thoughts go way back. I, not too long ago, was reading through Plato's Republic, and he argued that women should not be allowed to have a baby outside of a certain narrow age range. And he said, what do you do if, in fact, a woman has a baby, and let's say she's 17 or 34, he says, well, you just eliminate it. And then he argued that it would be good to take the children away from the mother immediately and have the state raise the children so that no one would know which baby belonged to which parents. Liberals over the centuries who have no respect for God and the created order and how he made us male and female to be mother and father and love and raise our children, they think they could be as creative as they want to be and no harm will come from implementing their policies, but they destroy people by the hundreds of millions. That has been the reality just even in the last century.
Absolutely. Now, when I was at Stanford University in the anthropology department in the late 70s, I sort of admired Mao's China from afar. And when I went to China, it was with certain liberal, even left-wing views.
Wow.
But living among the Chinese for a year and speaking and reading and writing Chinese, I came to understand very quickly that the Chinese Communist Party had been an absolute unmitigated disaster for the Chinese people. It had killed tens of millions of people. It had destroyed the livelihood of hundreds of millions of more. It was trying to force people into the mold of collectivism, trying to force their thoughts, indeed, into a mold where they could not even conceive of criticizing Chairman Mao and the party. And I left there as a Christian and as a someone with conservative moral values. Wow. I saw the value of the family because it was being destroyed before my eyes in China. And I saw the value of life in that operating room when I witnessed a late-term abortion on a woman who was 8 months pregnant. And I realized for the first time what an abortion was because I was confronted with it. And an abortion was the death of an unborn child and the grievous wounding of the mother, not just in body, because these were cesarean section abortions. They actually cut these women open to remove their dead babies. She was wounded not just in body, however, she was wounded in spirit as well. And for the first time, I realized the importance, the sanctity of life. And
wow.
So I left China with very different views than I arrived. And I would recommend that anyone with leftist views simply go and live in China or go and live in North Korea or Vietnam, a regime that tries to be all-controlling for a few months or a year. And I guarantee they would come out of that country with a very different view of things and very great appreciation for the respect for life, the freedom we enjoy in this country.
Yeah, we have a profile on the internet of a Christian televangelist highlighting a comment he made on CNN a while back with Wolf Blitzer, and it's Pat Robertson, and the question came up of China's forced abortion. This is horrifying because I mentioned earlier this program, Bob and Yurt Live, we have a dear friend, Xu Yanzhou, who has testified in Congress. She's been on C-SPAN, front page of the Washington Times. She's a spokesman for the personhood movement in this country. And to kill a baby within her mother's womb and against her mother's will is so horrific. To kill your child within your womb, and Pat Robertson said about China's forced abortion, he said, I think that right now they're doing what they have to do. I don't agree with forced abortion, but I don't think the United States needs to interfere with what they're doing internally in this regard. And that's from a Christian leader who should have been rebuked by every other Christian leader in the nation.
And Bob, it's not true to say that we don't have anything to do with the one-child policy, because it was Western ideas of radical environmentalism that were imported to China in the late 1970s that actually led to the inception of the one-child policy. So those ideas were a virus that came from the West and infected China. And secondly, we have been funding the Chinese one-child policy from the beginning through the United Nations Population Fund, which is a UN population control organization that we, the United States, set up in 1968 at the height of overpopulation hysteria. And for the most part, we have been funding since. And the UN Population Fund has been in China for 32 years now as the cheerleader of China's program. They have trained China's surgeons to do sterilizations and abortions. They have provided computers to China's government in order to help the government set quotas for the numbers of abortions and sterilizations each year. They have been in bed with China in terms of the one-child policy from the very beginning. We are still funding the UN Population Fund, and that some of that money is going to China. So to say that it's China's business and not ours, not true.
What a great point. Steve Mosier, president of the Population Research Institute. In fact, Planned Parenthood, people who donate money to Planned Parenthood because they say, well, I'm pro-choice, Planned Parenthood International has given many millions of dollars to China's population control program, which is forced abortion. It is not pro-choice in any conceivable way. Not only that, when you trace the guilt of what's happening in China to an import, an intellectual import, an export from the West, an import into China, that goes way back to Darwinist eugenics. And Darwin and the eugenics movement was a phenomenon in the popularity of it within China. There is an authoritative text out about the eugenics movement in Europe and how it was promoted. It rose to prominence and promoted here in the U.S. The book is titled War Against the Weak. At American Right to Life's website, they've got the trailer for that book. Just startling what has been built up intellectually in America and Europe and then exported to places where we want fewer kids. We want fewer blacks in Africa, fewer Chinese babies, fewer Indians.
Yeah, and the Chinese program is very much a eugenics program. It's very much an agenda of trying to breed a better Chinese man and better Chinese woman. Handicapped children in China are rare because doctors are under orders to kill them at birth. The Chinese government, in fact, will not let a couple get married if they are in any way handicapped unless they have first been sterilized. So there is a strong human breeding program alive and well in China today. So anyone who thought the Nazis' excesses in this regard disqualified eugenics from consideration forevermore in the future is wrong, because eugenics is alive and well in China today.
Wow. We have quotes in the article we have on overpopulation. Is the world overpopulated? No, at our website. And I'll give your website and our website out again. Yours is pop.org. That's pretty good, Steve.
Short for Population Research Institute.
A three-letter domain name is, I mean, that's got to be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, just that domain name. Pop.org. Ours is four letters, KGOV, KGOV.com/population. And we've had quotes in this article for, like I said, 15 years or more. They go back to people like Jacques Cousteau and Britain's Prince Philip, and I'll just give you those two quotes. They're so short. Prince Philip said that he would like to be reincarnated as a killer virus because the world is overpopulated. And I'm thinking, what would he want to be, like HIV? Maybe he wants to come back as an HIV virus and give people AIDS. How perverse that is. But Jacques Cousteau is even worse. He said, it's a terrible thing to say, but it has to be said. We must eliminate 350,000 people per day. It is a horrible thing to say, but it's just as bad not to say it.
Well, and of course, Prince Philip is still with us. Jacques Cousteau has gone to whatever reward he gets for saying something like that. But one who is very much among us and who is very powerful now, of course, is the president's science advisor, John P. Holdren, who wrote a book with Paul Ehrlich of Population Bomb fame some years ago, in which they talked openly of developing contraceptives that would be put in the water and would chemically sterilize people without their foreknowledge or consent in order to stave off the so-called problem of overpopulation. So there are a lot of wacko ideas on the left by people who don't understand that babies are a blessing and who don't understand that we're better off today with more people than we were in the past with far fewer.
Well,
you know, the population controller's attitude is there are just enough of us, but there are way too many of you.
Of you, right. Exactly. Paul Ehrlich, in his book, Population Bomb, I think that every single prediction he made failed. Every one. He said that there'd be widespread food rationing by the late 70s in America, and that by 1984, we'd be literally dying of thirst, and we would have 65 million famine deaths in America in the 1980s. And he's considered a brilliant authority by the left.
Well, he also predicted that under one scenario that fisheries would have been decimated in the Atlantic and Pacific beyond repair, and he recommended a one-child policy in the United States and the sterilization of everyone who had an IQ of below 90. Now, how can you say things like that and still get on Johnny Carson 47 times?
Yeah, it's because there's a war against God. The jihad against children is just one front on the long war against God. When people are in rebellion against God, it expresses itself in all kinds of ways, ultimately a self-hatred, a hatred of human beings, and a hatred of anything that's good or right. Like you said, the Soviets criticized marriage. I have a friend who speaks in high schools around the country. She was told many years ago she's not allowed to use the word marriage when speaking to students because it's discriminatory. That goes back to the 90s.
Yeah, the first commandment given to our first parents was be fruitful and multiply. Mm. But the first rebellion was launched by a spirit whose view of that was that we should be barren and sterilize ourselves. I think if you asked the devil what he wanted, he would want us to extinguish ourselves in this way.
Exactly. All right, so we're about out of time. Stephen Mosier. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on Bob and Yurt Live.
Thank you.
It's the Population Research Institute, their website, pop.org, and I strongly recommend you go to their homepage and check out their documentary, a mini documentary on the crisis in Russia. Of course, this battle against children is being waged all over the world. And we are so thankful for the honor and the opportunity of being permitted to stand up for the innocent, including for innocent children. And innocent children, whether they're Chinese or from Africa or in India, the kinds of kids that liberals say we have too many of, we got to get rid of them. So please, if you would, check out our website, kgov.com. That's kgov.com. You might want to go to our writings tab right at the top, and you'll see our article, Is the World Overpopulated? No. Again, our website, kgov.com, and our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278.
Now you can subscribe to Bob and Yart's monthly Bible study DVDs. These verse-by-verse Bible study videos are great for family Bible study or even starting your own neighborhood Bible study. Each month, you get 4 or 5 Bible study sessions on 2 DVDs. You can subscribe by calling 1-800-8-NYART or online at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.